This might sound nuts.
Oh boy, here we go again.
But we can actually make our House of Macadamias offer even better by giving 10% off for those Curva Mundial listeners who want to buy any products site-wide.
Whoa, really?
Yep. Just by using the code CURVA, you get 10% off your first order.
I would take it. You know how much the House of Macadamia's nuts are treats I snack on, as they have such great health benefits. Kinda like an avocado on steroids. And they have 50% less carbs than cashews while being the only nut high in omega-7s.
So, you like the deal?
Yeah, but where do we find it?
So just go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial, and there will be a direct link to our House of Macadamia's store. Then use the code CURVA for 10% off your first order.
So go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial, click the link to your House of Macadamia's store, then use the code CURVA for 10% off. Sounds easier than spelling macadamia. Are you a footballer that finds their feet slipping and sliding inside their boots during a match? If so, Curva Mundial has a great solution for you. We've partnered with Technigrip Socks to bring you an exclusive offer on their new Featherlite Grip Socks. Technigrip Socks are different because they provide breathable comfort and next-level grip, but without the annoying bumps or thick and spongy material of traditional grip socks. Designed for athletes seeking sleek performance, Technigrip socks are specially engineered with a unique grip yarn knitted into key areas of the sock, providing superior control without the bulk. They're lightweight and moisture-wicking with midsole compression, so your feet feel great in both practice and games. If you've been wearing grip socks, these are radically different and will take a little getting used to. But once you make the switch, you'll never look back. Head on over to technigrip.com. That's TEQNIGRIP.com. And use code CURVA15 for 15% off your first order. Again, head to technigrip.com and use code CURVA15 for a 15% discount. You'll thank us later. Welcome to Curva Mundial.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Curva Mundial. I am your host, Sal Bono, and my next guest is the bassist and lead singer of one of the biggest selling bands of all time and a pioneer in electronic music. Please welcome to the show, from Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, Liverpool supporter, Mr. Andy McCluskey. Welcome, Andy.
Well, thank you so much for the lovely introduction. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thank you so much for coming on. You have provided the soundtrack not only to parts of my life, but so many others. And I am so honored to have you on. So let's jump right on in here.
Okay.
OMD hails from the Merseyside. We in America know the town's name through the infamous Merseyside Derby. And obviously through the music, through your music. But how would you describe the area? Take me through a little tour.
Okay. Liverpool is one of those strange cities that's actually only on one side of the River Mersey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I live on the other side. I grew up on the other side. So, in fact, I was not born in Merseyside. I was born in Cheshire. We then got annexed when I was 17 and we became part of Merseyside. But if you talk to a real person from Liverpool, a proper Scouser,
okay,
they would say that Andy McCluskey is not a Scouser. He's a plastic Scouser or a woolly back. He's from the other side of the river. So this is a cross I have to bear. But also, you know, I didn't grow up in Liverpool. I sound a little bit Liverpudlian, but I can talk like that if you want us to. If I go to town, I go to the game, you know, so I like that sound. So, yeah, I mean, if I go to the game, I can sound like that if you want me to, proper Scouse. But Scousers would call me a woolly back. I'm a posh lad from the other side of the river.
Obviously, Liverpool's got such a rich musical history, thanks to a little band with four gentlemen in it. May have heard of them, the Beatles. What was it like creating a band that would come from that area? That did you ever feel like there was some sort of pressure to come from them? I mean, the Fab Four coming from the proper side of Liverpool, I guess, you know, and their Liverpudlian accents. Was there some sort of weight to being in a wanting to be a musician from that town?
Well, for me and Paul, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I was a kid. I was 10 when the Beatles split up. I remember listening to their singles. My mother had all their singles when I was in the 60s when I was a kid. But when I did get interested in music in the mid-70s and the idea of possibly making it, my influence was actually coming from Dusseldorf.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't, no, the Beatles, you know, things go, we're living in a postmodern era now where there's nothing in or out of fashion, but, you know, when I was younger, this was in fashion, that had gone out of fashion. So in the 70s, you know, the Beatles were kind of like, eh, you know, it's right. My generation, even though I'm from Merseyside. And so they weren't really a big inspiration to me. As I've grown older and I've sort of mellowed a bit, I look at their catalogue, and because what you realise is Lennon and McCartney were the greatest pop songwriters ever that walked the planet. The Beatles were, to my mind, the greatest band that ever walked the planet. You're never going to be the best, are you? Because they're always going to be number one. You've got serious competition. You're going to be number two is the best you can do. So, but we didn't even start out with aspiration. It was a crazy hobby. Paul and I used to do weird music in his mother's back room on a Saturday when she was at work. And we just, we dared ourselves to go on stage on the 12th of October, 1978, called ourselves a weird name because we were going to do one gig. It didn't matter. And we were going to play music that, frankly, even our best friends thought was shit because they were all into like Genesis and the Eagles and Pink Floyd. And here we are 45 years later.
That's got to be something, though, to sit, especially at that time, too, because as you said, your musical tastes were coming from Dusseldorf. Germany at that time, it was in such a bizarre circumstance, the Iron Curtain, and all of the sounds that came from there sounded like they came from the future. And then you kind of co-opted that, flipped it around, and then made it something that didn't sound like robots, didn't sound like something from what would be the Terminator soundtrack, if you will, but you could dance to it, you could smile to it, you could, you know, have a romance to it. Creating something that was so foreign at the time, or taking music that was so foreign at the time, but making it accessible to pop, was that what you want? Was that the plan?
No, again, there was no plan, Sal. There was no plan. I mean, we just, you know, Paul and I had all these influences. We were writing songs that we thought were experimental, and they all did start as experiments, but we liked melody, we liked pop. And so I think we'd taken the kind of German influence, we liked the minimality and the synth melodies of Kraftwerk. We didn't want to do machine robot music. There would be no point because people would just go, oh, you're copying Kraftwerk. Well, we didn't want to do that.
Right.
But we unconsciously, obviously, welded this with other influences. Nobody works in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Maybe our influences came from a few years earlier, from the kind of glam pop of like Slade and T-Rex and David Bowie and Roxy Music. I don't know, but we unconsciously created this sound for ourselves. And little did we know that what we thought was an experiment in 1978, 2 years later, was going to be the new international pop music, English synth pop.
It's unbelievable. And again, I always put it as like there's something in the water of Liverpool where and Manchester, there's certain towns where when you're a band that comes from there, from certain places outside of London, obviously London's like a huge city that, you know, like New York City, where there's always going to be weight and expectations, and there's just immediately, even if the band sucks, there's a coolness to it. But there's something in the water of the bands from Liverpool and Manchester where they've altered the course of so much, and again, like there's this joy to this something new and something different. And again, thank you so much for like giving us all of that. Now, there is something also in the waters of Liverpool, and that is the colors. You either bleed red or you bleed blue. So how did your fandom of Liverpool come about?
I honestly don't know. Growing up on my side of the river, strangely enough, I went to a school, you know, it was about 32 kids in the class, 16 boys, 16 girls. Whenever we had games time once a week, you were allowed to wear your football team socks, and we played at lunchtime, and it was always the Reds against the Blues. Now, I was a Red. I was wearing my red socks. There was four of us and 11 Everton fans and one guy that wasn't interested in football at all. So everybody I knew was an Everton fan. I don't know why I was a Liverpool fan. I don't know how I became a Liverpool fan. My dad was from Scotland, and he had, well, This is another story. He told me he played for Glasgow Celtic. He may have played for the schoolboys, but he didn't actually play for the first team because I've checked it out.
Oh.
So it was a bit of a Walter Mitty story, to be honest. He's passed away now, bless him, so I can call him out in public. But so, yeah, and I was a Reds fan. I was from the wrong side of the river. I didn't go to a game until I was 15 because I had nobody to take me. But yeah, they're my team, and it's been an incredible journey. I mean, obviously, I was young during the Shankly days and the Paisley days. We were the best team in the world. Then we went through the wilderness for a while, and then we've kind of stopped and started and stopped and started. And now we've got Mr. Klopp, who's brought the love back, brought the energy back.
Which leads me perfectly into my next question, because it's been under a hell of a run under the German tactician. And again, Germany finding a way to influence that city again. Mm-hmm. But what's it been like for you to see them win the Premier League for the first time in 30 years, do two Champions League final runs, win the competition at least once for the first time since 2004? There's got to be some sort of electricity happening, because I feel it in America, but I cannot imagine what it's like in town.
Mm-hmm. You know what? When there was a time there before Klopp came when you watched the team, and for many years, you know, you supported them because they're your team. And you know what it's like if you're a long-suffering Jets fan or something, you know, they haven't really been very good since the 60s. You know, and it's like, you love your team, but, you know, you're long-suffering. You just have to roll with it, you know. And, you know, you get an occasional victory where you jump up and down, and then the rest of the time you go, yeah, I know we're going to lose. Well, I know we're winning, but we're bound. We're going to concede a goal in the last 10 minutes. We always bloody do, you know. There was a long time there where it wasn't that easy, but, you know, compared to other teams, still, you know, we were still supporting a team that was in the Premier League. But then Klopp, as Klopp said himself, you know, I want to make you all believers again. I want you to think that even if we're not winning, we're going to win. We will win. Right. We will never stop. We will always give it 100%. And I think that's the thing that I love, you know, for the most part since Klopp came, watching Liverpool is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah.
You know, because they've been bloody well told to give everything. I mean, Klopp seems to be a nice, cheerful chap, but I wouldn't want to fuck with him in the dressing room. You know, I wouldn't want him to be angry with me, you know? And whereas, you know, Rafa Benitez did some great stuff for us, but you go to the game and it was painful. You know, it's like he said to the team, right, for the whole first half, just don't give away any chances. We're going to defend. And then second half, you know, when we get to the last half hour, I might let you take the brakes off and we can try. And it was just like, it was excruciatingly dull watching Rafa Benitez's team play most of the time. I mean, the best we ever were was in the second half against AC Milan in the final, where because we were 3-0 down at half time, he just went, fuck it, go for it, lads. It can't get any worse, you know?
Which, and funny enough, and I was going to bring that up because I'm a Milan fan. So that's my club.
Well, you see, I'm looking at your Italian tracksuit.
So, I mean, you had to make an educated guess here, a nice little hypothesis. But yeah, as I'm sitting here in my Adidas Italian tracksuit, but uh-huh. It's that game, I think, despite the fact that we lost, but despite following this past World Cup final, Argentina against France, I think for the longest time that was the greatest game I had ever seen, despite the fact that my team loses, because it's the most unlikely of comebacks. I have to ask every Liverpool fan on the show that ever comes on, what was that experience like for you? Because for me, I remember being at the bar and being like, well, we're winning and I'm going to leave. Yeah. Because it's just like, at this point, we're going to score 10 more. Paolo Maldini's having the game of his life. Nelson Dida's having the greatest, he's proven to be the greatest keeper at that point of all time. I'm like, this is it. It's done and dusted. I got stuff to do. And then that's it. And then stupid me, I leave.
Well, how old was he? He was about 10, 11 at the time. And at half time, he just went, yeah, I'm going to bed. I've had enough. And I said, you know what, James? Yeah, I'm changing the channel. I'm gonna watch something else on TV. Mm-hmm. And what we'd forgotten was that we'd left the TV on in the kitchen, and my wife shouted to me, "Are you not watching the game anymore?" I said, "Why?" She said, "You've scored." I went, "Have we?" And then I put it back on and went, "Oh my God, Stevie G just scored. Okay, wow, yeah, okay." And then we got the second goal. And then I shouted up to James, like, you know, "We've scored." And he went, "I don't care." and then I said, "We've got two. All right, I'm coming back now." And then, of course, the extra time was excruciating because you were battering us. You should have scored again in extra time. I mean, why have I lost the keeper's name? Anyway, our keeper saved a miraculous. Yeah. And then when it got to penalties, your team fell apart.
Oh, completely. And what was a bummer was, you know, when you look back, thankfully for YouTube and all these things, when I watch it again, it's just the English, no matter if they're an English club or a national, they're supposed to lose on penalties. That's the way the script writes itself, right? but you're right. At that time, you have Shevchenko, you've got Kaká, you've got tremendous players in their prime, you know, Ballon d'Or winners who struggling. And then there's you know, Stevie G, unbelievable. Unbelievable tournament, unbelievable.
Stevie G, world-class. Xabi Alonso, world-class. Didi Hamann, we brought on at halftime, and he should have been on for the whole game. We should have been playing Hamann all the way through the game. I don't know why he came on at halftime, but he shored up, holding in front of the defence. He kind of cut off the access. But, you know, we didn't have 11 world-class players. Milan did, but we didn't.
It's truly unbelievable.
It was crazy. Yeah, I mean, there's only one game I like watching more than that, and that's the 4-0 we against Barcelona when we beat them at Anfield.
that I remembered. Oh my boy, it's crazy because Milan Liverpool, maybe because 3 years later Ancelotti gets his revenge and we win in 2007 in Athens and. Whatever happened in Istanbul is forgotten about. But what's crazy is that it's a beautiful rivalry that's so respected because when Milan, the last couple of seasons when Milan and Liverpool played each other in Champions League, I think for the first time since 2007, because if there was a team that has been shit since, it's been AC Milan coming back. But playing each other, there was this beautiful respected rivalry. Like, hey, you know, Our clubs are so historic in the modern era because of these two games where just things happened, but there was no level of respect that both teams had shown, both clubs had shown, both fan bases have shown. It makes you think that and makes you hope, at least for me, that football can be like this more often, but it's not. You know, do you feel like that as well?
No, I totally agree. And I think a lot of it is down to, as you say, it's history. You know, that there's a handful of clubs who have had a long and successful history playing in European competition, and they all respect each other. You know, so obviously Liverpool, Milan, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and, you know, not all of the kind of recently bought Arab money teams like PSG and Manchester City and Newcastle United. I mean, Newcastle handed PSG their ass the other day, which is amazing. But you know, PSG just stink of a team that, one, is all put together, players just want the money, and two, it's dead easy when you're playing against French teams. You've got no competition in your league. You come up against a good team, and you don't know how to be resilient. You don't know how to dig deep because you don't have to most weeks.
And as you said, you had 11 world-class players on one side in 04, but the other guys just, they said to themselves, like, you know, let's just unleash hell. What do we got to lose at this point? If we go down 10-0, at least we gave it our all for 45 minutes. Mm. And then the inevitable happened. Not what we now know is the inevitable, but the unbelievable happens. And it's so... you kind of hope for like things like that to happen again. It reminded me of the last Champions League final where I'm watching Inter Milan play City, and I'm going, Inter are just completely dominating this entire game. This is a wonderful match. City get the one goal, City win, yes. But when you look at on paper, that game should have been a blowout in City's favor, but it wasn't. So maybe, you know,
You know, Liverpool fans, we are totally fucking sick of Manchester City. You know,
I mean, so what? How do you feel?
If it wasn't for City and Pep, we would have won several more league titles.
Right.
You know, they've beaten us by 1 point twice recently in leagues. You know,
right.
We had a bad season last season because Klopp didn't replace his midfield quickly enough. But, you know, it's just, I mean, the other incident, I don't know if you know, but, you know, Manchester City have 115 charges.
Well aware.
Fair play.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why is nobody doing this? If they were any other team, they would have been docked points. They would have had their trophies taken away from Glasgow Rangers. What was it, 10, 15 years ago, were overplaying payers and, you know, hiding the money. They got dropped down the divisions. They had to come back up two divisions. You know,
Juventus.
Juventus. Yeah,
it happened with Milan and Roma and Inter all got hit with financial fair play about 10 years ago. Which now we're finally starting to come out of it. A decade later, Juventus got docked points. Were thrown out of European competition for the year last season. But again, you're right. 100. But they didn't have. You could take those four Italian clubs I just mentioned, and it's still less financial charges than what City has altogether. And yet there's a blind eye there.
And Chelsea, £1 billion. They've players on like 8-year contracts, so they're trying to spread it out. But I mean, you know, what happened to the, you know, you're only allowed to lose 100 and something million in so many years? Why are these people not being fined and thrown out? It's just like, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, listen, Liverpool fans like a good conspiracy. You know, we're always complaining about things. I mean, did you hear about the VAR last weekend in Liverpool against Tottenham?
So I saw it, and I've seen the outrage. I saw Klopp saying the game should be replayed. So
did you hear the audio of VAR talking to
the ref? I did not.
Oh, yeah, no. Basically, what VAR didn't do is they didn't say, what is the on-field decision, offside or onside? They made an incorrect assumption that the goal was given. They hadn't seen the linesman's flag go up. They thought it was onside. So they never put up the screen with the lines. They just went, check complete, ruling on-field stands. So the ref goes, okay, it's offside, fine. Gives a free kick and Tottenham kick off. And then the guy on VAR is going, Daz, hey, no, listen, you've made a mistake. We've made a mistake. Fuck, stop the game. You can't, the rules say once a VAR check is complete and the game has kicked off again, you cannot stop it again. Even though they were sitting there going, oh, fuck, we thought it was given as a goal and we said, we agree with you.
Wow. Wow. See, I didn't know that part.
The two main VAR referees had just got back the day before the game with an 8-hour flight from the United Arab Emirates, getting paid shitloads of money by the UEA to referee a game in the UEA. UEA own which club in England? Oh, is it Manchester City by any chance?
And that is a beautiful conspiracy you got going on. I like that. Okay. I'm not saying, you know, we're going the Alex Jones route here with tin hats and all sorts of, but that does make you wonder though. It's also quite strange that we live in a time where we've developed so much technology and it's supposed to perfect the game, and yet in the meantime it's caused more controversy.
We have a saying in the music industry, which is assumption is the mother of all fuck ups. You know, don't, and it's true. It's like, so, you know, don't assume the first thing you do with VAR is you call the on-field referee and you say, what is the on-field decision? We're having the Rugby World Cup at the moment, you know, in France. I love watching that because immediately the referee goes, right, can you look at this? I've given a try on field, but I couldn't clearly see if he got the ball down. Can you please check if number 12 was offside and then check if he got the ball down and then tell me what happened? You know, and you can hear them talking. You know exactly what's going on. It's all smoke and mirrors with VAR. And then they just come out and go... And so nobody even saw the lines because they didn't think he was... They went, well, he's not offside. They've given the goal. So far, we don't even need to put the lines up on the screen. And then the game kicked off and there's nothing you can do about it.
And what's wild is that this could have implications further down the season. Every game matters, of course. But there are some allowances when it's like, oh, you know, you lost one weekend, but you come back, you win again, fine.
Yeah.
But you're going against for Tottenham this season are having a hell of a season so far. The Spurs, they will screw it up, but
they'll get Spursy in the end. Don't worry.
Yeah. But again, it could have implications though, which is a bit strange. But there was also Liverpool though has done some strange things, which is won the league title in COVID lockdown, which has got to be one of the most incredible things as a Liverpool fan, like one of the darkest times. So how did you celebrate that victory?
We couldn't, you know, we weren't allowed a victory parade with the bus. We weren't, you know, the stadium was empty. They threw up a load of fireworks and played some music and shit, but no, we couldn't, you know, it was quite frankly, fucking typical of Liverpool to win it when nobody was allowed to celebrate, you know?
Champions League in 2022, fantastic match. And again, there's a controversy that happens right before the game with the tickets and the French police and the fans. And it's just so unfortunate that, again, it's Liverpool fans once again being the victims here, unfortunately, in this complete clusterfuck of terrible bureaucracy and terrible organization, terrible planning on UEFA, on FIFA, on the French police, French politicians. What was that like for you?
You know, you sat there waiting for the game to start. And why hasn't the game started? And then you see this footage of tear gas and, you know, people who had tickets. Thousands of people who had tickets couldn't get in.
Right.
And you know, but to me, it wasn't just the Liverpool fans. You know, the other teams' fans also were treated. In Liverpool, we have to be careful because the rest of the country think we're always the victims. We've got a martyr syndrome. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, it's always you. I mean, we've had the good times and we've had the bad times.
But there is some sort of warrant to horrible. It. Yeah. I wouldn't call it Marta syndrome. I mean, there, what happened at Hillsborough, what happened to those fans, those families, that's traumatizing. That's, you know, and then the fucking government lied to everybody. So it's just like,
oh yeah,
the
police lied. The police lied, and the families had to wait over 20 years for an apology, for the police to admit what they've done, that they doctored all the evidence reports, and it was, you know, because the police didn't want to accept that they shouldn't have opened the gates when they did. I mean, at least, you know, one good thing came out of it is that they took the fucking fences down,
right?
But you know, it was too late for 97 people, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. There is you mentioned earlier the fandom of Celtic because of your dad playing for the boys team. What is that like in comparison to your Liverpool fandom? Because that's also another team that's marred by so much history and so much intensity.
When I was a kid, because we used to go on holiday to Scotland all the time, and we'd always be up there in August or Easter, and we'd go to the preseason games, and we go to an Easter game. And when I was a kid, you could get kids in if they were small enough to jump over the turnstile. So, that's you could get into Parker because it was mostly all standing anyway. So it was flexible, you know. And my there was three kids in our family. So one of us was always handed down the line. Oh, can you jump, my lad? And all right, yeah. Jump. Somebody, as long as an adult jumped you over the barrier, you were in free. I The Glasgow Cup in August, the kind of pre-season game, the friendly thing there, well, not friendly when you were playing Rangers, but I can remember seeing Lou McCarry playing when he was a teenager. I was a stronger Celtic fan up until my teens than I was a Liverpool fan. Wow. Because I saw Celtic play. I went, you know, I stood in the ground. And my dad was something to do with Celtic, because he would go up to Hampden Park, or he would go up to Parkhead, and he would knock on the players' entrance, and people would go, "Oh, all right, Snowball." How? Because he had jet black hair. His nickname was Snowball. They go, "All right, Snowball. Jimmy, are you in? Come on in." So I have walked on the turf at Hampden when I was a kid. I have been in the trophy room at Celtic Park when I was a kid. They knew my dad. But I checked the listings, and he never played for the first team before the Second World War. Then he broke his leg.
Mm, wow.
And he came down to play for New Brighton when he was 20. Well, how old was he? About 26. He came down in 1950 to play for New Brighton. He was an engineer and a part-time player. New Brighton played in the... New Brighton is my side of the river. It's the other side of the river, okay, from Liverpool. He used to play for New Brighton when they used to get 15,000 people a week in the northern third.
Wow.
But he was a part-time player. But I knew he did play for them, because that's where he met my mum. He was playing in goal, and my mother met him when he was playing for them. So I knew he did play for New Brighton. He was amazing. I mean, my dad, right up until his 60s, could keep you up your ball indefinitely. Indefinitely. Wow. Just boom, 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 boom. And I wanted to be a football player till I was about 7, when I realised I had absolutely no fucking talent. I used to go and play football in my park, and with my dad in the park. And instead of us having fun, my dad would go, "Right, I'm going to be in goal between these two trees. Now you take a corner and try and bend it towards the goal with the right outside of your foot. Now the inside of it." And I'd spend all day just trying to bend the ball. And be like, "Can't we just have a kickabout? You know, it's like, why am I taking fucking corners all day, Dad? This is boring, you know."
Have you watched this? It reminds me of this, the final scene in the David Beckham docuseries on Netflix. Have you watched that?
No, I haven't. I can't bring myself to watch David and Victoria Beckham on TV. Thank you.
Sorry, fair enough. There is, but the last few minutes of it, it's him and his son, and the son is just like, "Well, Dad, you know, I want to learn to bend the ball like you," and it's the exact same thing. And, you know, here's David Beckham trying to teach the son how to bend the ball, and the kid's just not doing it properly. And then the kid turns around and says, "Well, I'm going to get like 11 of my mates, and you can get 11 of your mates, and we'll play against each other." And he's like, "Okay, well, I'll call Zizou, and I'll call Roberto Carlos, and I'll call Figo." And he's like, "I'll call Ronaldo." He's like, well, you know, he's like, "Yeah, sure, call your friends." But there is that moment where you see how, you know, they just can't, you know, at one point, then the kid is just like, "Well, can we just kick the ball then and have fun?" Mm-hmm. It's like, can't do it.
Yeah, it's 10,000 hours, isn't it? You know, it's like, yeah, you know, if you really want to be good at it, you've got to put the graft in. And not many kids are kind of crazy over and over and over again, because they're like blinkered. It's like having some sort of football OCD. Just do it again, right. do it again. You know. So anyway.
Now time for a coffee break.
Curva Mundial is sponsored by Mod Cup Coffee in Jersey City. But you can get it anywhere in the world from modcup.com. Modcup, drink modern coffee. Use code MUNDIAL for 10% off your first order.
Three rapid-fire questions. These are the final part of the interview. If you could bring back one retired player to Liverpool, former player, alive or dead, who would it be and why?
Dalglish.
Oh, okay.
Because he was a brilliant striker, but he was also the glue. You know, he brought the midfield in. He played in that gap. He was so clever. He was so talented. He was just magic.
If you have infinite amount of money, Liverpool can sign anybody they want. An active player today, who would it be and why?
I would like us to sign Erling Haaland. Not to play for us, but to teach Darwin Nunez how to fucking score.
That is the perfect answer. And finally, finally, what has been your favorite moment as a fan of this game?
I hate to say it. Penalties against Milan.
It's quite all right. I get it.
That was such an emotional roller coaster for the best part of 3 hours. I was wrecked at the end of it, but we won.
And that's all that matters. If the shoe was on the other foot, I get it. Andy McCluskey, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, the album is called Bauhaus Staircase. Catch Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark on tour. Please listen to the record. Please buy the record. And thank you. Thank you so much for everything you have done.
Well, it's so nice to talk football instead of music all the time. So that was a wonderful end to my day. And we haven't announced we're coming over to North America yet, but we will fall next year. We're going to be doing a big tour. So we'll see you there.
Glorious. See you then. Thank you, Andy.
Okay. Ciao.
Follow us on Twitter at Curva Mundial Pod and subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. Curva Mundial listeners can get 20% off their next order at Football Devotion. For football designs with a difference, head over to footballdevotion.com and use code CURVA for 20% off your order. That's code CURVA.